Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this non-stop flight-free podcast service. Our flight time will be roughly 20 minutes. Please make sure your seat backs and tray tables are in their full upright position and that your seat belt is correctly fastened. But no need to set your mobile devices to airplane mode, that can stay off. We've been cleared to take off, so sit back, relax, and enjoy this flight-free podcast.
In our Flight Free 2020 podcast series, we've talked a lot about travel. We've told you how to get to the Alps and various other European destinations by train. We've looked at the homegrown tourism here in the British Isles. We've even explored how to cross an ocean without flying. But how about taking it back to basics with the humble bicycle? As a mode of transport, you can't get much lower carbon, and it's a fantastic leveller. It's used by all sorts of people across the globe, and it doesn't require a huge budget to be able to go exploring. We've lined up two passionate cycle tourers, Joe and Debs, to talk to us about travelling by bicycle.
Okay, so I'm Debs.
I'm Joe. I suppose we started travelling by bike 8 years ago. We took a really short trip. We decided it would be a really cool holiday just to ride our bikes to a ferry, take a ferry to France and ride around for 10 days.
Can I stop you there? Joe thought it would be a really good trip. I really didn't like cycling very much. I tried to ride to school for commuting and I was a rubbish cyclist. And occasionally we would take up very heavy mountain bikes on camping holidays or whatever, and we would do a day of cycling. And I would mainly just think how rubbish I was, how hard it was. Joe would be so far ahead of me on the hill. So Joe was really excited about this cheese and wine and cycling holiday in France. And I thought, well, I hope I'll be all right. And so a few months before, I did get a road bike, and that was my cycling game changer, because suddenly commuting was much easier. I could go much faster. It became less about my leg strength, more about my CV fitness, and I had some of that. So it was actually quite an enjoyable holiday, despite my serious misgivings in advance.
I just thought it'd be, I'd read books by Mark Beaumont, Alistair Humphreys, like crazy people who do really long trips, and thought, wow, it'd be really cool to do that, but there's no way I could ever do that. But what I might be able to do is ride 20 miles a day in France and eat lots of bread and cheese, and, you know, I'll carry a tent even though it's really heavy, but, you know, we'll manage. And we did manage, and we actually had a really nice time, and, you know, we'd always kind of driven places before, and suddenly the bike opened up a new type of holiday, and it sort of went from there, really.
I think the cheese wine France tour was a bit like a gateway drug. You know, people worry, like, teenagers going out and starting to drink alcohol might lead to other things. You know, for us, it led to cycling around New Zealand. And then when we were working in Canada a bit later that year, we were like, oh, how do you get to Toronto from Vancouver? Oh, I know, you ride a bike. Well, no, you don't, do you? Most people don't ride a bike. There's lots of other ways to do that. But again, once we'd sort of done that journey, that was such a big distance. You can see that on a world map, that then the whole idea of you pack your house up and put some stuff in your panniers and just set off from your front door and keep riding in the same direction, eventually you'll get back there, becomes much more of a reality and not just something that you read in books.
Yeah, that sort of idea that we had, you know, from reading all these crazy men usually that, you know, cycle really long distances and spend years, you know, after we'd done sort of slightly longer and slightly longer trips, we sort of did think, well, you know, we could actually have a bash at that. We can just put our panniers on our bikes, you know, quit our jobs and set off and see how far we get. And, you know, if we'd have only got 3 months down the road and decided that we'd had enough, we thought we would come home and actually, you know, we had a really great time, so we just kept going. And, you know, if you can ride 50 miles, then you'd ride 50 miles the next day. And then if you keep doing that, before you know it, you're quite a long way from home if you just keep doing it in a straight line, which we did.
Or straightish line.
Yeah, but not a circle. Yeah, so before we knew it, we were the other side of the world, and, you know, it had only taken about a year.
And that meant you were catapulted into the category of crazy people.
Yeah, it seems you do, without even realizing it and without feeling really crazy or daring ourselves. You know, we weren't great wild campers or anything like that. You know, I still would never have put ourselves in that category of these crazy people that we read who did these really amazing journeys $5 a day.
We've never had frost in our beards.
No, never.
Something to aspire to for the future.
Yeah, never been held at gunpoint or anything like that. It was all very.
Was that one time with the Carabinieri?
Yeah. It was all quite. I don't know. Quite. No, I don't want to say it's easy because I don't like, play it down. But if you just think that you're going on a bike ride every day, you're just never actually going back the way you came from. You're just keeping going. That sort of breaks it down day by day into something that actually anyone can do if you've got enough time, really. And
cake.
Because, of course, your dual name is Breaks and Cakes.
That's right.
I suppose that leads to the next point, which is, what are the advantages to travelling by bicycle? And I know you're going to say to eat lots of cake.
Absolutely.
I mean, to me, that is number one. You really can pretty much sample the local delicacies wherever you go and not worry a thing about going to three bakeries a day and, you know, having all kinds of different treats. You know, it's almost essential, actually, because you need the calories and you need the energy. So I think for me, that's one of the biggest draws. Now, if we ever drive anywhere, I just feel like we haven't earned treats, you know. We're like, what have we done? Sat on a seat for a while. You know, you haven't earned a cake by doing that, have you?
And also, I think the fact that you see everything at such a good pace, like you're never going too fast. Like you're never like, oh, well, I missed that. It went past too quickly. Nothing ever goes past too quickly. And you really see landscapes change and people change and culture change and food change, you know. Cycling through Thailand, we get really excited. We've ridden into a new area where there's different stuff in the banana leaves that are grilled on the barbecues at the roadside and stuff like that. So I think that's really nice. And I think the more you do that, the more it seems weird to just fly somewhere and be dumped in a place where everything's so different and not see those changes happen.
Yeah, I think one thing I like about bicycle travel is that it's fast enough to get somewhere, but it's slow enough to see everything and feel very much part of the landscape and also the physicality of it. You know, you earn those. It's not just that you earn your cake, you earn the views, you earn the hills, you earn the satisfaction because you've physically done it. You haven't just pressed your toe on a pedal and, you know, it's done it for you kind of thing.
It's the perfect pace. I think we've always said that. Like, we like walking, but wow, it takes a long time to get anywhere. But, you know, the bike suddenly, you know, distances are much more achievable. But yeah, still, you can appreciate everything. You feel every hill. You see everything change, you know, day by day and mile by mile, which is great.
It's a great sense of accomplishment. And you get that with walking and paddling or other things as well. But you can get a lot further on a bike, as you say. So
given that international travel is tricky at the moment, could the bicycle be the way we access travel and adventure while more conventional types of travel are difficult? It's in our nature to get out and explore. As we've said, it's a very accessible form of transport. We saw it during the lockdown in March this year when everyone was getting out on their bikes. Now, of course, Deb's and Joe's France tour led to them cycling all the way around the world. But it doesn't have to be long distance. One of the things Deb said during our chat was that if you keep the mileage down, you can keep the comfort high. You don't even have to camp. You can stay in hotels or do whatever makes you feel happy. There's so much to explore here in the UK, and you can really get to know places if you go there by bike.
We did a bike tour in February half term, but we got this Wild Ruins book. My brother sent Jo this Wild Ruins book because she likes ruins, likes taking pictures of them and, you know, like old ruined churches or whatever. And so to plan a February cycle tour, we got the train to King's Lynn, which is an easy journey from our house. It's 45 minutes, something like that. And we rode around the ruin. We planned our route by going from ruin to ruin. And so we'd booked some accommodation at an Airbnb and a couple of youth hostels or something. So it's February. We thought we don't fancy camping. And we planned shorter distances than normal, but there was always longer options if the day was nice, or shorter options. Like one of the days, if we'd gone point to point, the hostels were 20 miles apart or something, but we actually rode 45 because it was a nice day and we could choose to do that. But that really was the ultimate inflexibility for cycle touring, because it wasn't, you know, we didn't know what the weather was going to be like. So we had to imagine, like, if it's really miserable, what's the most we'd want to ride? And that was how far apart the things were. But make sure there's an option for if it's a good day, we can ride a bit further. And then we just looked at this book with the ruins in, and we looked at the OS map and found even more ruins. And I think we visited 12 ruined churches or abbeys in 4 days. And it was just a great, it really gave us a bit of a purpose, because otherwise, what are we doing going to ride around North Norfolk? The beaches are lovely, but, you know, it's not necessarily really stunning cycling territory, but it actually is. We found lots of really nice small roads. The ruins are great. There were really loads of really different ones. There was one with all kind of creepy plants growing through it, like it looked like it could have been in Tomb Raider, and some ones that were just kind of small bits of wall left, some that were, you know, virtually intact. It was just fascinating to see them all, and it really gave us a purpose. So whatever you're interested in, whether it's ruins like Joe, or whether you really like old pub signs, or, you know, village cricket pitches, or the blue plaques, I always thought a blue plaque bike tour would be a really good one, then you can find those things and join them up by bicycle.
From each of you, can I have a suggestion for what is your essential piece of kit that you think you couldn't have a successful tour without it?
Okay, I'm going to go first on the one that probably you would say as well. We always take pillows, real pillows, not blow up. Well, we've got half size ones. I think they originally came from a plane. But you can make it yourself by cutting a pillow in half. Yeah. And it's still big enough for your head, but you can also then cut a pillowcase in half, and you've got a pillowcase on them if you sew it up.
Jo's saying that, if you sew it up. She's never sewn one of these.
Yeah, if you sew it up. But I think if you've got what you need to get a good, if you're camping, that is, to get a good night's sleep, and if for you it's a pillow, you know, they don't weigh anything, they're pretty bulky, but they don't weigh anything. So when I see people with those blow up pillows that are like, have got velvet on the top, just because they save, you know, about 3 grams, I just think that's the craziest thing in the world. Like, take yourself something that is going to help you have a good night's sleep if you're a camper, because, you know, life's so much better when you've had a decent night's sleep.
Well, I think I'm going to say, obviously, pack as light as you can. So everything you need to take, get it ready, and then chuck out some of the stuff from that. Don't take it all.
Apart from your pillow.
And, yeah, then put it in, then maybe chuck out a bit more. But don't scrimp on gloves and socks on a cycle tour for different weathers and rain and all that kind of thing. So, you know, think about the comfort of your hands and feet. If your hands and feet are comfy and warm and dry, then chances are you're going to feel a bit better about life. So make sure that you are able to keep your hands and feet warm and dry, I would say is a bit of a useful one if we're thinking about COVID cycle touring and staying local to the UK.
We often talk about how travel opens our eyes to new cultures and helps us understand each other, and is a really important part of our globalised society. But at Flight Free UK, we question whether air travel gives us that. Are we really conscious travellers when we fly? Or are other modes of travel more effective in teaching us about the world? Back to the interview with Debs and Joe.
Do you think that riding a bicycle makes you a more conscious traveller?
Yes.
I think you definitely, you know, one thing that you can't grasp when you travel by plane is distance. You know, you get on a plane and a set amount of hours later, like Dev said, you're just deposited in a new place. And I think to appreciate how different that is and how far away from home it is, you know, just to be transported there in a box just takes that away completely. And yeah, I think the other thing about traveling by bike, I'm not sure this entirely answers the question, but one thing I really like is you have to be aware of the places that you travel through, because you have to stop at the small places. You know, you don't have any choice. You need to get supplies. You need to stop for a break. If you were flying, you know, if we've met people when we were in Asia who would have been, you know, flying from site to site to site, and you miss out all the, like, the rest of the country. You know, you don't really appreciate what else there is or what a country's really like. And okay, you know, you only ever get a glimpse of what a country's like even by bike, because you can't see it all. But what you do see is a really good cross section of it, because you have to travel through places where people live rather than just places where people visit as a tourist. There's no choice over that. You know, you have to sleep there, you have to go to the local shops, or you know, you just can't do the distances between tourist sites in any other way. And I think that is one thing that the bike really does you do feel connected, like you know, you're connected because your wheels are on the ground for a start, but people come and talk to you, you know, you have to interact with people rather than just zooming over it or through it. And you know, that's what I think I really like about it.
I think it is a great way to interact with people and also to feel your surroundings a bit more. You know, Joe said about having your wheels on the ground, but you also know how hot it is, how cold it is, what direction the wind's coming from, what it feels like when a butterfly hits your arm when you're going downhill super fast and you think, well, that shouldn't have bruised me, but it has. Or what it feels like when a really big North American truck goes past you and you feel the heat of the brakes, or what it smells like when there's a dead skunk in the road. I mean, there's nothing that comes close to that in this country, but I mean, dead badgers aren't great, but a skunk is something else. So you really get to all the dreamy sights and sounds, like the beautiful views and the sound of the waves if you're on a coastal road, but you also, you know, get to really experience the true glories of places.
It's more realistic, isn't it? People want an authentic travel experience. Like, you know, you get that and more because you get all the bad stuff as well as the good stuff. You know, it's, I just can't imagine like flying over stuff and missing all the things in between. It's a journey, isn't it?
It's a different type of FOMO.
Yeah.
We're at this point in our planet's history where emissions have to fall drastically and fast. Do you think that this is part of the answer? Completely reinventing how we see travel, using flights very sparingly, and that's what we're trying to encourage. But what do you think about that as kind of our final concluding point?
I think anything that reduces the reliance on other transport for journeys, it is super important. I think not using your car for a 2-mile journey is just as important as not taking flights you don't need to take. And it's going to be a very long time to change habits, you know, for people, because we've been such a car-centric society. But I do think people making different transport choices is hugely important. And I think I find it strange that people don't necessarily seem to associate their own trips with kind of the carbon problem. Oh, you know, well, I do this at home and I do this at home, but then, you know, we're gonna fly to Central America for 10 days and then fly back again. And you just think, well, that you may have, and I know every action does help, but you're negating so many of the other things that you've put a lot of effort into. And there's so much to see in Europe that you don't need a plane to see. So we had cause to need to ride home from Helsinki. And we needed to get to Helsinki first, and the cheapest way to get there would have been to fly. But if we'd flown, we would never have been to Latvia and been in Riga for Midsummer Night. You know, we'd never have been to Tallinn and seen the beautiful medieval city walls. And to ride there and then ride back a different loop was such a fantastic part of our trip. So I'm really pleased that we didn't fly. And I think choosing not to fly, I think it's been over 3 years now since we've flown, was really a big part of some of the trips we've made. And I hope that other people can maybe think about appreciating the things we have in the UK or the things that we can access easily on continental Europe, and not just try and skip over those things, if you like, on a flight.
And it is hard, because I think it takes people to sort of reassess what they think a holiday is. And, you know, for so many people, you don't get much annual leave. You know, you want to feel like you're making the most of it, and you want to get a suntan. And, you know, the way to do that is to get on a plane and go somewhere sunny for a week. And, you know, that for so many people, that's what a holiday is. And I've been there, you know, when I was younger, that was definitely what I thought a holiday was as well. And, you know, if someone had told me that in 20 years time, I'd be cycling my bike, you know, riding my bike for a holiday, I'd have said that you're absolutely crazy. But I think once you perhaps start taking those small little steps and you see that the journey can be part of the holiday as well, you know, it's not, we didn't think with that, oh, you know, we could fly to Helsinki in a day or we could ride there in 2 weeks. It wasn't like, oh, it's going to take us 2 weeks to get there. It was like, well, actually, our holiday starts from the moment we leave. And that journey is part of the trip as well. It's part of the adventure. It's, you know, we're still having a holiday and seeing new places. And I wonder whether for a lot of people, and you know, it's not to be blamed, because that's you know what culture tells us, that your holiday starts the minute you step off a plane. So any time you spend getting to your destination is, you know, just travel time. And if you were to spend a week, you know, getting there by train and bike, then you've lost a week of your holiday. But maybe that is your holiday. So it's just a complete change of mindset, I suppose, around what you think adventure is, what you think a holiday is, what you think a trip is. And, you know, maybe it does start as soon as you leave your door.
And that's a great sentiment to finish with. So thank you to Debs and Joe for joining us this month. You can follow their adventures at Breaks and Cakes on Twitter. Thanks for listening and see you next month.
Ladies and gentlemen, the seatbelt sign indicates we're coming to the end of our journey. Don't forget to take your duty-free items with you. We have some excellent tweets and inspiring Instagram posts at FlightFree2020. Or how about our Facebook page, FlightFree UK? And our website is always available, www.flightfree.co.uk. We've been clear to land, so on behalf of the Flight Free Podcast Service, I'd like to thank you for joining us, and we look forward to welcoming you on board again next month.